Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Against almost all the odds, Donald Trump wins the American presidency. This is an historic political earthquake for the United States and the world. Welcome to Trumpland. To crosstalk Trump's incredible victory, I'm joined by my guest here in Moscow, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Gilbert Doctorow. He is the European coordinator of the American Committee for East-West Accord. And we have Rory Shuchet. He is a RT News presenter. Okay, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I very much appreciate it. Mark, can you pinch me? Did it happen? Did it happen?
Okay,
let me go to Gilbert first. You were the guy that's been on Crosstalk repeatedly talking about this campaign, talking about this candidate, and you were right all along. Well, why?
The question was one of prioritizing. Nobody felt that Donald was the perfect candidate. He had character defects. He had some positions that many people found offensive on immigrants and on women and so forth. But the question is, did you appreciate that the number one issue facing us was war and peace? Now, in war and peace, Donald was occupying the whole stage calling for a reexamination of American foreign policy, for a departure from our world hegemon, our world gendarme positions.
But what's interesting is that this is the Republican candidate doing this. This is a remarkable change. We've never seen this before. Rory, when I saw the results here, I thought of you. Brexit, the American Brexit.
Yeah, it really is. It's just waking up to another Brexit today because so many of us are just in shock. Admittedly, most of us probably had a very, very sleepless night trying to watch the polls all throughout the late evening hours. I'm amazed by all of this. I dare say that our planet is going to live a little bit longer. Because I was very, very worried about Hillary Clinton coming from this war-mongering background and all of her connections in Washington as well. And what you just said a moment ago, it's a flip, isn't it? Because the GOP, the Republicans, right. they're right. the war hawks. And yet here we have Trump, who apparently is not such a war hawk. Yeah. So for the peace of the world, maybe I'm being optimistic, but I'm very happy, actually.
The American people surprised the establishment. I mean, I have to admit, I mean, all of us, saw the polls, saw how, like, CNN was, it really was an embarrassing coverage that they had because they had to eat crow. They had egg on their face, and they still do. I mean, the elites were talking to the elites, but they weren't listening to the people.
Yeah, well, as one of those elites, pundit, I have to say mea culpa. I have been saying on this show for almost a year that Hillary Clinton was going to win, very pessimistically so. I was wrong. Never have it felt so good to be so very wrong. But to my defense, everyone else was wrong, too. The analysts, the polls, I mean, everything from not in far just CNN, Nate's 538, they were the most optimistic for Trump, giving him a 28% chance of winning as of last night.
But CNN, even in the last moments, they kept saying, though, too close to call, too close to call.
No, what they kept doing is trying to find the right math, okay?
Right.
And they couldn't. Go ahead, Gilbert.
Back to this question about the Republicans being the war party, or the Republicans being the calling for a very strong, a very determined American foreign policy, and the Democrats having been traditionally more soft on these issues. I think that goes back, that generalization was true maybe 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. It certainly preceded the accession to power of Madeleine Albright as Secretary of State and the incoming consensus. There has been a consensus which Americans took a great deal of pride in, that Republicans and Democrats agreed fully on what our foreign policy should look like. What has happened in this election is that consensus has been blasted away.
No, and Trump is not the Republican Party.
See, this is a really good point.
The Republican Party doesn't share Trump's sort of policy.
Both parties now. Both parties are in chaos because, Paul Ryan, I have to wonder if he's going to have his job in the House of Representatives in January here. He should be fired, okay? And a lot of people in the Republican Party...
You're fired.
You're fired. And he knows how to say it, okay? The Democratic Party faces the same thing. They put everything behind Hillary Clinton and the Clinton machine, and they have failed.
Well, this election has been decried as a disgrace, a national shame. That we've heard that.
What? Because the people spoke up. The people
said no. It was decried because of the level of the political culture, the personal attacks, the ad hominem attacks, the McCarthyism of Clinton, the the almost disgraceful remarks about Hillary's illnesses or potential illnesses, about things that have very little bearing on the conduct of American domestic and foreign policy. In this sense, the debates themselves were shameful. What we have at the end of the day, and I'd like to bring this up as a positive note, is a validation of the American democracy as it functions. Because the people who have been ignored, the people disenfranchised, the people who have said for the last 25, 30 years, year after year, in Pew Institute polls, that they don't support our policy.
They've taken everything away from them. They've taken away their future. They've taken away their wages. They've taken away the prospects for their children.
The
only thing
that
was left was a vote. Maybe that's their last weapon. I don't know.
We don't get the money, do we? When it comes to salaries around the world, the cost of living keeps going up. Salaries do not go up to reflect this cost of living increase. But just briefly, I mean, to me, it's just amazing. You know, what's happened with Trump and Clinton now, it's like the people have just had a big stuff you to the establishment.
Yeah.
No more Clinton dynasty. No more cronyism in Wall Street.
But this brings up a really interesting point, and I'd like to ask all of you, because we had WikiLeaks play a major role in this campaign. We had the scandal surrounding the Clinton family and their cronies. Was that a tipping point, Mark, or is it really the bread and butter issues that you're talking about? You know, people wanting to be empowered again.
We can talk foreign policy here. We can talk war and peace issues, but we all know very well the American people don't care about foreign policy. They didn't vote on foreign policy, and they didn't have a conception that they were facing, possible World War III scenarios in Syria and Ukraine. This is a victory of the disenfranchised, those who have lost out from a cosmopolitan globalization. This is a revenge of the white working class in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. No one thought this possible, and this is a repeat of the Brexit vote. This is a populist thing. Now, that's not the way it's going to be read. I think WikiLeaks perhaps had a role, but I think we could overestimate that role. We've already heard I've already heard the liberal media on the Twitter sphere proclaiming that the Trump victory is the greatest, most successful KGB operation in world history.
I was waiting for that.
Of course, they have to blame someone. So.
You know, what's really interesting here in this campaign is that you had the media, you had Hollywood, the music industry.
Wall Street.
You had the White House actively supporting Clinton.
CIA.
I've never seen such an array together against, not against a party, against one man.
Yeah,
and this is what's really remarkable.
Which shows
here.
What a threat he is to this establishment. You know, and I would love to hear what is being said in the Clinton camp right now. They must be in panic mode. And what about the Clinton debts? You and I were talking off air a few moments ago. What did you have to say about that, Peter?
Well, I mean, you know, when you look at the way the pay for play Clinton Foundation, they incurred enormous debts because there was the expectation that they were going to win and that they would honor those debts. They're not going to be honored right now. The entire political establishment now, their head is spinning. This is a very new direction we're moving.
I have to wonder if Hillary Clinton's going to have to seek political asylum in Riyadh.
The only place where she can go.
But, we have to look at the political technology here, because in many ways, the ground rules have been proven wrong. The assumption that Hillary would win because of her team on the ground getting out the vote from particular segments of the population, whether it's Latinos or blacks or whatever, she was playing to minorities and she was playing to an effective machine on the ground. That effective machine on the ground seems to have been superseded by technology, by Trump's heavy use of social networks, by Trump's use of rallies. That is to say, he didn't need this big organization. He did the rallies.
And playing the media against itself.
It's really interesting because of such negative coverage that Trump had. And I think this actually worked to his advantage because, again, you have these elites talking among themselves and talking at the voter.
Yeah.
And the voters reacted to this. What they were listening to, what they watched on CNN and the rest of them, wasn't them. And this is what we saw with this ballot.
Then you have to look at the professionalism of the Trump team, small as it was. I've been receiving, like I suppose everybody else who was on the Trump mailing list, every 15 minutes, a new appeal for funds. And I've watched the last couple of weeks. The emphasis was, hey, boys, they gave you a map. And his campaign manager was responsible for the message that went out. And they said, we're missing four votes, electoral votes. Now, that sounded preposterous.
At the time.
And it turns out they were spot on. They had better feel for how these states would vote than everyone else.
Is Clinton and the media just victims of their own hubris?
Well, it's such a good point, Peter. And it's been astonishing to me to be here in Russia and to watch the Western media's reaction to all of this campaign. I mean, I'm sorry, but to watch CNN, which has been the Clinton news network. In fact, some of the CNN presenters have even been caught on camera saying, we're doing everything we can
to help
Clinton.
They got the questions for the debate.
That's right.
I mean, anybody else doing that would have been repudiated.
But you also respect the fact that you have to, okay, you tip your hat to the power of certain mainstream networks. You tip your hat to that, but then you realize, for example, today, that guess what? They're powerful, but they're not that powerful.
And they're not believed.
This is a complete repudiation of the liberal mainstream media, the journalists, the media industry in the U.S., because it goes beyond their complete shilling for Clinton in print and on air. It goes beyond the endorsements of all but one or two major newspapers and media industries. The media industries donated huge sums of money entirely to the Clinton campaign. And they have failed. This was their attempt to frame the election.
Just a moment. I think you're rushing to write off the future of mass media. You're ignoring the fact that they are not for a single party. They are for the ruling party.
They're for the establishment.
They will be fed by the Trump team. They will take the press handouts. Mm-hmm. They will publish it as news the same way as they've been doing for Clinton. Mm-hmm. The thing that's
let me jump in here, gentlemen. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's incredible victory. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's amazing victory. Okay, I want to go back to Gilbert before we went to the break. We're talking about how the media dealt with this election and maybe how they're going to deal with president-elect and then President Trump.
Well, let's look at mainstream media. Let's look at the newspapers of record. I have in mind particularly the Washington Post, which has been the cheerleader for the Clinton campaign. What I've detected in the last couple of weeks has been a change not in the editorial policy. The editorials, the op-ed articles have been almost consistently pro-Clinton. However, the amount of coverage, the columns given to the Trump campaign, and to what has actually happened out on the field, has changed dramatically. When they felt that they could ridicule Trump, that he had no chance of getting to the White House, they gave him very little coverage. It has been virtually even, and they've even mentioned that at a Trump rally in one of these battleground states, Trump had 35,000 enthusiastic supporters, and 30 miles away, Clinton was gathered barely 5. These facts have been presented. So journalism was allowed to perform its
function. You weren't seeing this on the mainstream. Because some of the mainstream... The TV networks, when they're bringing with their cameras, and it came to a Hillary Clinton rally, the way the camera angles were played was that you couldn't actually see how small the crowds
were.
Really,
what's really interesting
it was like
is that, you know,
with
what,
Trump.
What happened here is that, again, the voters... We're watching this mainstream media, particularly CNN and MSNBC.
They were voting against it.
Were they believing it?
That's my point, Rory. And I think the viewers felt insulted because they're insulting their common sense. I got sick and tired of, you know, the type of people that go to a Trump rally.
Deplorable.
I watched a lot of the pictures. They look like people I knew when I was growing up. Okay.
I'm going to disagree with Dr. Gilbert. I think... President Trump, I can say that now, President Trump is going to be at war with the media establishment in the U.S. for the next 4 years. I think Twitter is a wonderful tool for detecting the groupthink and the mentality behind the journalists. I very much encourage you to follow all of these Western mainstream journalists on Twitter to see their interactions, the way they think amongst each other. And they are in rage and tears right now. And they are an ideological class. They are a liberal ideological class of praxis. forcing their view on the world, and they are not going to sit down and
but
take
when you,
this.
When you talk about forcing their view on the world, though, can we just bring up the issue of American exceptionalism here? Because I want to know, what does a Trump presidency mean for foreign policy?
Realpolitik.
Yeah, I think we'll have a much more of a realist approach here. I mean, it doesn't mean it's going to be a rosy relationship with Russia. I don't assume that. And anyone that does should actually read everything that Trump and his people have said. But we won't be in this type of new Cold War or even close to a hot war that Hillary Clinton was threatening the world with.
I think definitely with Trump, we will see a more realist take, something we haven't seen in U.S. foreign policy in 30 years, since the end of the Soviet Union, or at least since the end of George H.W. Bush's presidency. We are going to see what Trump has spoken directly against is the euphemism of democracy promotion. He has spoken very specifically about
regime change.
That's right. And he considers it wasteful and counterproductive on an economic sense and on a political sense. And I think we're going to see an end to this combative relationship with great powers.
South China Sea? Will America keep sending its ships into the South China Sea?
Trump has had a very negative stance towards China. But I think that perhaps Trump can do better business with China in the end than Clinton.
Okay. Well, I think the bases is an issue. He didn't spell this out, but I think you have to follow the dots. He's spoken about beefing up the U.S. military to make it great again. He's adding to the servicemen, adding to the ships that we build, adding to our improving our nuclear capability. All that costs a lot of money. What he hasn't said is where that money is going to come from, and I would like to make a bet on where it's going to come from, at the expense of withdrawing from some of these 600 bases that are costing the United
States. Leaner and meaner.
They're taking $600 billion a year. Zhirinovsky, on a talk show here a couple of weeks ago, said, hey, wait a minute, we're not as inferior to the United States military might as it would appear, because the United States is spending so much of its military budget on toilet paper and sausages.
Yeah, but also the Russian military is designed for military purposes, whereas the American military is designed for profit.
Projecting political change here.
For hegemony.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is what could very well change. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is the entire time that Barack Obama has been in office, has that been repudiated now? For Americans, Obamacare, that is a very, very important issue. Having not lived in the United States during those years, I can't really speak to that there. But Gilbert, is this a repudiation of everything Obama?
I believe it is. And Obama himself described a possible Trump victory in those terms. I think he summarized it perfectly. Both his domestic policy was a failure, except for Obamacare, come under severe criticism because of the premiums rising. And the foreign policy achievements were nil to negative.
Well, I mean, Hugo Chavez said some years ago that when Obama was coming into the White House, that there was a lot of hope. Yet change, yes, we can. And Hugo Chavez said we had hoped that Obama would choose to lead instead of live, but he chose to live instead of lead. Now, one of my questions is, will Trump be allowed to be Trump in the White House?
It's an interesting thing here because we got that phrase from Ronald Reagan. Will Ronald Reagan be Reagan? And he certainly was Reagan. Watching Trump during this campaign, in the very beginning, he stumbled a lot. And to see someone in a year and a half get up to speed, I mean, he was in his stride in the last week, in his stride as a candidate.
Absolutely.
And he spoke presidentially.
Yeah.
And
that was really amazing. How is he still standing?
This is the earthquake here because he has an entire establishment still in place. He has a Republican Party that is in crisis. The civil war in the Republican Party starts now.
Now, that administration is going to be decapitated. I think you have to look at people two, three levels down from the present. But having said that, we have to consider how we got to the mess we're in today. And I take that back to 2002, 2003. The foreign policy establishment, the intelligence establishment of the United States, was decapitated by Dick Cheney. They had a vast purge going on. So if Trump is going to take back control of these key sides of the executive power, he has to remove the top people, all of whom are being fed by the hand-fed by
Obama. You're saying that Trump will be able to drain the swamp, as he's been saying, because I don't think
just
he can.
A moment.
You guys, he won an incredible victory. Let's give him that and then take the next step in January.
You have to look at his definition of who he is and what he can do. Mm-hmm. I think his definition has been very laid back in a Reagan sense. He has taken a directional position. Mm-hmm. He, as the president, he is going to give new directions, new marching orders, and he has, and to a great extent, the ability to pull that off, even irrespective of relationship with Congress.
But he's going to be, from my sense of it, he is going to be a domestic policy president, and this is what people are expecting from him. We can talk a lot about foreign policy, but the average American is worried about home.
Okay, so domestically, Trump is going to come in with the Republican Party, nominally his party, holding both houses of Congress. But he is going to, having won the election, he is now going to have to go to war to win his party for his domestic agenda. On foreign policy, we all know that the neocons and the flip side,
will they come back to the Republican Party?
The liberal interventionists flocked to Clinton. But a lot of Trump's foreign policy advisors are also hawkish neocons, right? Mm-hmm. But just B-grade ones, right? They're going to try to push him in a lot of directions, and Trump is going to have to pick and choose his battles on foreign policy. I think it's very interesting to watch is going to be the relationship between the U.S. and the EU now. Mm. I think we're going to see a repeat of the Bush years when the EU is going to recoil from Trump's character. Yep. And I think that Europe is going to face further disintegration, further weakening, and possibly improve relations with Russia as a result.
Okay, but I think that will be more on a rhetorical level. I mean, unfortunately for the Europeans,
have three major elections coming up. In 2017, there's the French, the German, and the Dutch. These are decisive powers within the EU structure and how it sets policy. I think the continued dominance of Merkel in Europe is finished. And this was the nail in her coffin. The question is, how are the populist movements going to find expression? Are they going to be extremist, as some people tell us? Are they going to be moving towards the center and acting as parties of power?
Could we see a more likely President Le Pen? And friends?
I don't think so, but I think we will see.
Trump.
Gentlemen, we've got a minute and a half here. Okay. What is Hillary Clinton's concession speech going to consist of?
Honestly, guys, I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm simply going to get comfortable with a big thing of popcorn and a few drinks over here. And I don't know what she's going to say, but I'm going to relish every moment. I'm sorry.
What do you think?
No, I share the same.
Lots of popcorn then.
She needs a long vacation to work on her memoirs.
Oof.
And I wish her well.
She's going to need lawyers.
I wish her well in retirement and looking after her grandchildren.
I am going to sup on the tears of the U.S. foreign policy blob. I'm going to relish them. I'm going to tell them how delicious they are, and I'm going to enjoy the restoration of realism in whatever slight degree to American foreign policy.
Well, 30 seconds, Gilbert. If you were an advisor to Donald Trump on the first day of office, what would you suggest him to do?
Open up the airwaves, open up the discussion of these foreign policy and domestic issues to continued real debate. He has been so important in making the whole lot of us credible in the United States, as we deserve to be, because we are at least half of the country.
I think, Matt, Donald, take a break. You've done good, kid.
Paradigm shift.
Paradigm shift. Well, as we talked about, it's the second Brexit of the year.
Right.
Maybe we'll see it in France next year. All right, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, crosstalk rules. I love you.